May it please the court. I will be arguing point one of appellant's brief and standing on the brief as submitted with respect to the remaining points. What the Batson v. Kentucky application of the Equal Protection Clause forbids is the prosecutor's use of a peremptory challenge to remove an African-American juror solely on the basis of race, or based on an assumption that African-American jurors as a group will be unable to impartially consider the state's case against an African-American defendant. Mr. Meeks is an African-American defendant, and at trial he challenged the state's use of its peremptory strike to remove an African-American female veneer person from the jury named Ms. Collins. In response to Mr. Meeks' Batson challenge, the state gave a reason for striking a veneer person Collins that violated Batson. That reason was not only race-based, but it was also based on an implicit assumption about African-American jurors and Mexican jurors as a group. Now, specifically, when challenged, the prosecuting attorney gave a two-part answer as her reason for striking veneer person Collins. She said that she struck veneer person Collins because she was in a row from which a huge outcry was heard in response to the racist remarks of another veneer person. The prosecuting attorney then went on to explain that her intent in striking veneer person Collins was to make sure that she didn't start out a case where there was a person of Mexican descent or African-American descent upset about racial issues. Now, the prosecutor's reason for striking veneer person Collins was not race neutral. Race was inherent within the explanation, and also the prosecutor's discriminatory intent in her actions was evident from the explanation itself.
Also, so you would suggest that it's not proper for her to strike a juror who responded negatively to a racist remark. And not just negatively, but significantly negative.
I don't want to make this case a case about generalization. I do think in this particular case, the facts indicate that not only did this prosecutor strike her because she'd made this outburst, but because in particular she was an African American who'd made the outburst, and she didn't believe that an African American upset about racial issues
would this
could
be different if
impartial.
I'm sorry. Would this be different if the prosecutor said she was concerned that someone had shouted out but didn't know who it was but thought it was in this one row? Did she make any attempt to do further questioning to ask who had shouted out something to try to identify who had caused that, or did she otherwise ask any further questions to find out if the comments by the juror who was excused for cause had affected their ability to reach a fair decision? Or did she just go on to other questions?
She did not put anything on record about what she had observed or heard.
Do you think it's clear from the record that the witness who was struck was the one that made the comment about, let's go ahead and open that can?
No, it's not clear who the individual was who actually made the comment about, let's open the can. The prosecuting attorney...
Would it matter what the race was of whoever made that statement?
Had that person been identified as being a particular person, I don't think that the race would have mattered, especially if it was not offered as a reason for striking the person. If the prosecuting attorney had simply said, well, I want to strike the person who made the comment about opening the can.
But if that had been their intent, wouldn't they have tried to identify that person and find out who it was if that was their only concern? They would have asked who made the comment or asked each juror to make the comment.
Or maybe they assumed the judge saw it. You know, that's my, I mean, it looks like most people assume that that was the person who made the statement. The judge could have observed that, could have known that's who we were talking about.
Well, I don't think there's anything in the record that indicates that the judge knew about whom the prosecuting attorney was speaking.
Is there anything in the record that indicates the contrary? Because we assume the facts in the light most favorable to the court's ruling. So does the record show that the judge did not know who made the statement?
Well, the judge makes a comment in response to defense counsel's remark, and defense counsel remarks that, well, there were a lot of people who made comments about the racist remarks of veneer person Arnold. And after that, the trial court indicates, yes, that's true. There were several people who had commented on that particular remark, and that and she also commented that the remark was racist. So it does at least indicate from the court's comments that the court also did not know exactly who had made the comment about let's open that can. And Judge Stitt, to answer your question, I do think that it is probative of the prosecuting attorney's intent, and also probative of pretext, that she never brought this to the court's attention when it occurred and never attempted to identify the veneer person who had made the comment
until after
a Batson challenge.
She said she didn't know. That's why she was striking the whole row. But she didn't ever ask any questions to try to identify further who it was.
No, she didn't ask any questions to identify who it was, and she also didn't ask any questions of any of the jurors about whether or not they could set aside what veneer person Arnold had said and their feelings about what veneer person Arnold had said, and then fairly and impartially consider the case. The explanation also had implicit within it an assumption, and almost a stereotype, that African Americans and Mexicans who were upset about racial issues would somehow be less impartial or more partial than their counterparts of different races when they were encountered racial issues or were upset about racial issues. Now, the prosecuting attorney never put a basis for this assumption on record. She was never asked about the basis for it, and she never offered one. So we're left to guess, you know, as to what the experience was that the prosecutor had, what beliefs she had, or what knowledge she had formed the basis for this assumption.
Well, what she specifically said was that there is a difference between being offended by the racist remarks, that everyone was offended, most of the courtroom gasped, including her table, but the difference is yelling out and injecting that into the case. So she made a distinction that the conduct was significant enough, so that seems not to be just a stereotypic assumption.
Well, it isn't with respect to that particular statement. The statement that I think wherein it lies the stereotype is when she talks about how she doesn't want to start a case where there's a person of Mexican descent or African American descent upset about racial issues. That was part of her explanation. And that indicates that she's making an assumption about race, and in particular, people of African American and Mexican race, and how they would react when they are upset about racial issues.
But it's upset to the extent of yelling out in the courtroom. It's not just that someone happens to be offended.
Well, I mean, she struck the entire row, and there is. The record indicates she struck the entire row, and I didn't get the impression that the entire row had said, let's open the can.
Well, she didn't actually strike the entire row. She calculated to have the entire row stricken, but she did not strike the entire row.
That's correct. Thank you.
She left the fingerprint person because she assumed in her explanation that the defendant would strike that particular person.
Correct. She did not strike the whole row. She said she wanted the entire row stricken. She did strike Hosey and she struck Collins, but the defense struck Ms. Knight over.
Yeah, over her objection, you said, so she said she wanted it, but her own statement showed she did not because she tried to keep that person in, even though they were in the row.
Correct. One would think that she would have welcomed the opportunity to get Ms. Knight off the jury if, in fact, she wanted to get rid of the entire row because that outburst had come from that row. But the prosecuting attorney actually acted to impede Ms. Knight's removal and did not take the opportunity to have her removed at the earliest chance that she had, and then asked the court to believe that she waited and to take the second chance that the defense might or might not remove her with a peremptory.
Counsel, your brief seems to rely upon the Holman case, the Court of Appeals case that applies that one race-based reason is sufficient to find a Batson violation, even though there may be some other race-neutral reasons. So are you saying that we could never have a mixed motive or dual motivation case?
I think that's the question that we have, that the court took transfer on. Holman doesn't specifically say that the court is applying a per se rule, that any race-based reason, no matter what the circumstances, would invalidate a prosecutor's strike. But I do think that it is support for the concept, and it's an illustration of where the court did apply that without that particular, or took that particular approach without expressly stating that it was doing so.
So can we ever have a dual motivation or mixed motive case? Such as, I mean, I know you disagree, this is one, but are you saying that that's a concept that we should never recognize?
Well, I think to recognize it would undermine the direction and dictates of Batson v. Kentucky, which is that, you know, a juror should not be struck solely on the basis of race or based on any assumptions about that particular veneer person's race as a group. And I think to permit it would be to undermine Batson and what its teachings are.
In an analogous, or in a different area, but there's tests in the employment discrimination area. The federal courts use a motivating factor test, and this court uses, because of our statute, a contributing factor standard. Is either of those, neither of those are kind of all or nothing. But they look at what was the motivating factor in the federal system or whether it was a contributing factor in the state system. Is either of those an appropriate standard for use here?
Well, of course, I'm arguing that the mixed motive standard and the dual motivation analysis should not apply and that this court should adopt a per se approach that any race-based explanation
if
would invalidate the strike.
Uh-huh.
But I do think that even if this court were to apply a mixed motive analysis or a dual motivation analysis in this case, that the court would reach the conclusion that the strike should have been disallowed. And that's because the race was a substantial motivating factor in this case. And the state has not shown by a preponderance of the evidence that the strike would have been made but for this veneer person's race. And I say that because of the prosecuting attorney's express statement about not wanting to start out a case where there was a person of Mexican descent and African-American descent upset about racial issues. And I also make that statement because of her dissimilar treatment of a similarly situated juror, Ms. Knight, in that she did not move to remove her from the jury, whereas she did move to peremptorily strike veneer person Collins. And the existence of that dissimilar treatment is evidence of the pretext in
argument assumes the prosecutor didn't think that a particular juror made the statement about let's open that can of worms. Because then they're not similarly situated. I mean, whoever made that statement was more than just a gas like the rest of the row.
Correct, but Juror Knight or Veneer Person Knight could have been that person that made that statement, just as Veneer Person Collins could have been.
Did the prosecutor, did she ever say she knew, or did she say she wasn't sure she thought it was someone in the room?
She said she never turned around to see.
But I think the question was, could she have actually thought it was one or the other? Did she say anything to indicate that? Or did she indicate on the record that she didn't know who it was in the row, but she thought it was someone in the room?
I believe she indicated in the record that when the comment was made, she didn't turn around to see who was making it. And it came from behind her, is what the record reflects. She said, the row behind me. She said, I didn't want to spin around, and the statement was over.
Was there a person of Mexican descent in the row?
No, there wasn't. And actually, there is nothing on record indicating that any of the veneer persons were of Mexican descent.
The question is, what did counsel mean by the statement? I don't want to start the case where there's a person of Mexican descent and African-American descent upset about racial issues. The victim was of Mexican descent and the defendant was African-American. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So are you proposing, do you disagree that that's who the prosecutor was referring to, the victim and the defendant? Or, because it sounds as though, I mean, your argument is that the person being referred to was the veneer person of African-American descent.
Yes, my argument is that the prosecuting attorney was referring to the veneer persons when she made that statement. She was not referring to either the victim or the defendant.
Does it make sense, though, that with the reference to Mexican descent? Because that has to be to the victim if there's no one if there are no veneer persons who are of Mexican descent.
It appears to have no relation to the case. Reference to Mexican descent, but I don't know personally whether the prosecuting attorney thought that someone on the veneer was of Mexican descent and may have been mistaken about it. I can't give the court any more direction or opinion as to what the prosecutor might have been thinking when she made that reference to Mexican descent.
Is there another question?
No.
Well, I mean, does it make sense that she was saying why she struck a juror? So if she was referring to the victim and the defendant, it wouldn't change their anger level to strike jurors or not strike jurors once the one who made the racial remark was gone. So she must have been referring by one or the other as a juror. Is that right?
That's how I interpreted it. I definitely didn't think that it was any reference to the victim and the defendant.
But it possibly could be read that she said, here we have a case where there is a person of Mexican descent and a person of African-American descent, and I don't want to have a case with that circumstance and have jurors upset about racial issues.
She didn't expressly say that. It's possible that's what she meant. But I do think the reference here to the Mexican descent and the African-American descent refers directly to the veneer persons that are on the panel and doesn't refer to the defendant or to the victim.
Thank you. We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
United States Supreme Court has held as far back as Swain versus Alabama that the purpose of peremptory strikes is to assure the parties that the jurors before whom they will try the case will decide on the basis of the evidence placed before them and not otherwise. This case presents the question of whether the desire to have a race-neutral trial as a matter of law, evinces inherent discriminatory intent and is not a race-neutral explanation under State versus Batson. Now, in this case, what you had was what was described as a huge outcry in the row behind the prosecutor. Someone shouted out after the defense attorney, one veneer person made racist comments. That person was a white male stricken by the prosecution. After that, the defense attorney, to his credit, trying to calm things down, said, without opening a can of worms at 10 minutes to 5 that the judge doesn't want me to open. And someone shouted out from that row, let's open that can. Clearly evincing a desire to open a race-based can of worms, if you will. The prosecutor did not know which of the veneer persons on that row made the comment, except that it was a female person. The prosecutor had struck Ms. Hosey, who was a white female, struck Ms. Collins, who was a black female, and calculated, as she said explicitly in giving her explanation, that the defense was going to strike Donna Knight, and how did she, and she knew that because the defense had already attempted to strike Donna Knight.
So it's your position she wanted everybody in the row struck, including Ms. Knight?
Yes, ma'am. Then why she said, I feel better if everyone, no one in that row behind me.
Then why did she oppose Ms. Knight's being struck?
Because she knew the defense was going to strike
No, No. That's why she says she didn't strike her, and then she opposed the defense's strike of Ms. Knight. Doesn't that belie her statement? She later opposed the state. The defense's attempt to strike Ms. Knight, so doesn't that belie her statement? She wanted everybody in the row, including Ms. Knight, to be out when she opposed the defense's attempt to strike her.
Well, she didn't think the reason given for the strike for cause was that she worked with the police for 30 years, and obviously she didn't want that to be a reason for cause. But as for a peremptory, she did not oppose or did not make a Batson challenge or anything else.
Now, your opponent argues that Collins and Hosey really aren't similarly situated, that Hosey said the police often lie, and Collins said she really didn't have any concerns about what the prosecutor had said during poor Dyer, so they really weren't similarly situated.
The first time that argument has been made is in the Missouri Supreme Court. That argument was not made at trial. In fact, there were no arguments on pretext on this issue made at trial other than you can't tell who in that row made the comment. The reason... And the procedure on Batson was not normal in the trial court. Rather than identify the race of the person or the gender, or the basis for the Batson strike, which wasn't done, the defense attorney jumped ahead and said that, veneer person Collins didn't say much, and there are two other white veneer persons in the row behind her who also didn't say much, and therefore it's pretext. And then the prosecutor said, that's not my reason at all. The prosecutor gave a reason. Defense counsel's only rejoinder to the prosecutor's reason was, well, I don't know that you can tell who in the row made the comment. And then the prosecutor explained, that's why I struck veneer person Hosey as well as veneer person Collins. I knew everybody else in the row was stricken except for the one that you already tried to strike that I know you're going to strike. And that's why I wanted the whole row stricken. After that, there was no attempt by the defense. Defense was offered another opportunity to come back on that reason. And did not make any argument on pretext. And then they waived the issue in the motion for new trial. Because in the motion for new trial, there is no argument based on this reason. The only thing the motion for new trial does is go back to the beginning and argue that there were other jurors who did not make much comment during the course of the voir dire. In other words, the comparables that are offered are those original veneer persons who didn't talk much that are in a totally different row. There was no argument whatsoever that veneer person Knight was a comparable. So that argument was not made at trial. That argument was not made in the motion for new trial, and that argument was not made in the Court of Appeals. When we got a new attorney in the Supreme Court, she discovered that argument and is now attempting to say that that's the basis for pretext. Clearly, defense counsel at trial did not offer that.
Well, she's saying it's a racial reason on its face also, so you don't need to get into pretext. That she said, I struck them because they're African-American, and that you can't do that.
And this is where context matters, Your Honor, in my opinion. Because first she talks about, and the key to this case really is the reference to a person of Mexican descent. Because as she says, and as she admits, there were no veneer persons of Mexican descent. So who is she talking about when she talks about a person of veneer, of Mexican descent that she doesn't want upset about racial issues? The victim was from Mexico. The victim was a migrant worker from Mexico who barely spoke English. In fact, the inability to speak English with the person who shot him, or to understand only snatches of it, perhaps contributed to the misunderstanding that led to the shooting.
And how does getting rid of
the material witnesses were Mexican?
How does getting rid of the row of jurors affect the degree of upset of the victim or the defendant?
Well, the victim was very concerned about his ability to get a fair trial in his adopted country. I mean, the man was shot on the 4th of July. He's new to the country, and he's shot on the 4th of July. He's not familiar with our legal system. He's concerned about whether he's going to get a fair trial when there's all this outcry trying to make the trial about something other than what happened to him.
And what about the defendant? Who is the African-American being referred to? Is that the juror or the defendant?
I think the only way that sentence makes any parallel sense is if she's pointing to the two parties, saying,
Well, you didn't ever make that argument in your brief. This is the first time you suggested the African-American was the defendant.
I think I said it could have been either one, but the trial court had the opportunity to judge based on the demeanor, the gestures, whatever was made in the courtroom as to which one it was referring to.
And how, again, would striking the row of jurors affect the would that make the defendant less upset? Or
Well, he's just had a huge racial incident in the courtroom.
And how would striking
she wants both parties to be confident that they're going to receive a trial that's based, as Swain says, on the evidence placed before them and not otherwise. So rather than have this poisonous racial atmosphere that had been injected into the courtroom by veneer person Arnold, that had been exacerbated by somebody yelling out, let's open that can of worms, she wanted there to be a fair trial for everybody. And I think that's what she's saying in that sentence. And you know, hypothetically, she could have been standing there and said, you know, rather than have a person of Mexican descent and pointed to the victim, and a person of African-American descent and pointed to the defendant. I mean, that's why we leave these things to the trial court, because they're the ones that are in a position to judge what's going on in the courtroom and what kind of demeanor the prosecutor has, what kind of demeanor the veneer person has, what the atmosphere in the courtroom is, all of which are factors that this court has cited in Parker as being relevant. And that's what I think was going on. I think the trial court, you know, Judge Neal instantly accepted that explanation. She said, emphasized the poisonous atmosphere of the court. She said she agreed that Arnold's statements were definitely racist. Court finds the reasoning for striking Ms. Collins and Ms. Hosey are racially neutral because what he had to say was offensive to the courtroom, and I'm sure everybody else in the courtroom then asked whether there was a Batson motion on Hosey. And, of course, there wasn't a Batson motion.
Did the trial court make any record of the prosecutor's demeanor?
Not explicitly, but she accepted her explanation, so presumably she found it credible. And I think that's important. And the United States Supreme Court emphasized the importance of that in Hernandez. In fact, the United States Supreme Court said that demeanor, attitude, and behavior during voir dire are all race-neutral explanations. And that was a case, mind you, where the argument was that people had been stricken because they were Latino, because the prosecutor's reason was he didn't want jurors who would not defer to the Spanish translator, as opposed to their own reading of what Spanish was. And there was an argument that that was a surrogate for race, et cetera, but the United States Supreme Court found that that was a race-neutral reason because you could have people speaking Spanish of any race, and that the behavior during voir dire, which was what this is based on, the colloquy about ability to defer translation, was a legitimate non-discriminatory reason. In this court in Weaver, I think, in 1995, and I cited the Eighth Circuit case, which was after your case, but it relied heavily on this court's case in State versus Weaver at 912 Southwest 2nd 499. You had a death penalty case where the prosecutor's reason was that I had qualms about the juror's ability to impose the death penalty, quote, particularly on a fellow black person. And this court held that because the other reasons that were given, which included the juror's hesitancy in responding, her failure to make eye contact, her demeanor, and her flippancy and other intangibles, that was a legitimate non-discriminatory reason because the strike would have been made anyway. And that's the same thing that the Eighth Circuit said in upholding your decision in Weaver versus Bowersox. So demeanor, attitude, and behavior during voir dire, all things that the trial court has an opportunity to observe, all things we don't have an opportunity to observe on appeal. So I believe we should defer under the standard of review to what the trial court saw and heard and decided, and rather than assume that this person that Judge Neal was not making a proper explanation. Now, Ms. Benninger's first comment in giving her reasons was that Mr. Arnold made very racist statements in the box. Now, clearly, Ms. Benninger, the prosecutor, was concerned about racism. She did not want racism infecting her trial. And she explained that she has an interest in that because all of her victims are and witnesses are Mexican immigrants who live at the margins of society. Why would she want a racist jury? She has no interest whatsoever in having a racist jury. And that's something that the trial court could determine. Now, I admit that there are other arguments you could make as to why this may or may not have been pretextual, but pretext is a question of fact. And whether an explanation in this step of the analysis is a question of fact. And it's up to the trial court to weigh the various factors that are on one side or the other that go to the question of fact. And there is evidence in the record which supports the trial court's decision. She struck a white person for the very same reason. And that's how we know, by the way, if you apply mixed motive analysis, that the same strike would have been made, because she made the same strike against Hosey for this very same reason. Secondly, she kept African-American veneer persons while striking three white veneer persons. She kept the ones who were not involved in the incident. That goes to the credibility of her explanation. She did not penalize people who gasped appropriately and who reacted appropriately to what had happened in expressing their racist opinions. The prosecution table was among those. But she did strike the people who made an outcry in a courtroom. Now, I think, you know, I'm sure I would have been one of the people offended. Whether or not I'd have been one that made the outcry, I don't know. But I think if I make an outcry in a courtroom, you know, when I don't like something my co-counsel says or whatever, no matter how right or wrong I may be, I'm probably going to be escorted from the courtroom, and I'm probably not going to be considered an appropriate person to serve on a jury, particularly on a discretionary thing like a peremptory strike. So I believe that the trial court's finding that this was a race-neutral strike in context and not based on solely on race, as Batson requires, is a credible finding and which should be deferred to. And of course, any group could be victimized, you know, by something like this. I mean, say, we don't know for sure that it wasn't Hosey that made the outcry and that Hosey wasn't supporting Arnold. I mean, for all we know, she wanted to open that can of worms because she agreed with Arnold. And she wanted to get into this whole debate about, you know, who knows what. Or it could have been someone who wanted to influence to send a message that, you know, too many people of a particular race are going to prison or whatever. You know, that also, that would have victimized the other side. But, you know, someday you might have, you could have a white person on the jury, for example, who thinks that there are too many Mexican workers coming into this country and that maybe they ought to all be sent back. And maybe something worse than that ought to be done as a matter of public policy. You know, that could, that would affect the prosecution in this case. So, having a race-based reason for making an outcry is something that could poison a trial for members of any race, and that's why it is race-neutral in context. And, you know, say you had a white supremacist that made negative remarks about Mexicans, and the prosecutor's victim is Mexican, and she says, well, I want that person stricken because, you know, it's a white guy who hates Mexicans. Now, she would have mentioned the person's race, she would have mentioned the person's gender, but that's not the reason why she struck the person. She struck the person because she didn't want racism infecting the trial. And that's why the mere mention of race cannot be something that disqualifies something as a race-neutral reason. If there are no further questions.
Thank you.
I think I'll stand on that.
Thank you.
So if, in fact, racism has come up in the jury selection, how does a counsel make sure that they have a race-neutral jury panel, a jury?
Well, I think that either one of the parties could have made inquiry about the comments that veneer person Arnold had made. And determined whether or not they felt similarly to veneer person Arnold with respect to his views on race. And they also could have determined from the veneer panel whether or not they could set aside whatever feelings they had about the comments that veneer person Arnold had made and then proceed.
That would deal with strikes for cause, though, not necessarily peremptory strikes, right? You wouldn't be required to go down that line of questioning and potentially prejudice the entire jury for just a peremptory strike.
Well, if race is a legitimate issue in this trial, and I'm not saying that it is, there is no evidence in the record that this was a racially motivated crime, that it was a hate crime of any type. This was about a spurned lover attacking and assaulting the other man. It doesn't appear that race was involved in the case at all. But assuming that race is a legitimate issue, it's definitely something that could have been voired on and that the veneer panel could have been questioned about.
Here race was injected into the jury selection process by a veneer person.
Correct. And I do think that once injected into the case, if there were legitimate concerns at that point about the reactions that individuals had to the comments and also about whether or not the individuals would carry what they'd heard into the courtroom during the case itself, the presentation of the evidence, and the deliberation of guilt, I do think that it's something that could have been, made of it.
Prior cases that require further inquiry? When, under what circumstances have we required further inquiry? When we're talking about demeanor that is something that is, if someone wants to strike based on demeanor, then we require further inquiry. Is there anything else that you know of?
Well, the court does have to inquire or has some responsibility for the jurors and all of the near persons who are on the panel. If there's someone sleeping, if there's someone out of order, and also if there's a possibility that a comment could taint the jury, the judge can do something about that.
If the judge believes
that there's a possibility taint. That a comment mm-hmm. may taint the taint. Jury, then the judge can act in that circumstance.
Thank you.
I believe that there's discretion exercised there, though.
Any other questions? Thank you. Case will be submitted.